G-3, Ford McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. I just feel that we're placing an awful lot of faith in these old written messages. William Godfrey sighed again, making his point one last time. That's all I'll say. Dan, Tara, I admire the commitment to contact from both of you. You're a credit to your titles, and you're a credit to your family. I want it to be known that I don't approve of this, but I won't stand in the way. The thought on the edge of Dan's mind was that Godfrey couldn't have stood in the way if he'd tried, but he chose not to share it. It would have been easier for Godfrey to pretend not to care, to sycophantically agree with Dan's stance, or to keep his mouth shut completely. That he had shared his candid views, and especially that they were focused on Dan and Tara's safety as well as Piper's health, spoke very well of the ICA chairman as far as Dan McCarthy was concerned. Emma, Dan said, seeking the final word from the one person who he would let stand in the way if she put her foot all the way down. Holding her daughter and looking at the next two most important people in her life, Dan and Tara, Emma felt a pressure like none she had ever known. That it was on them to take this risk, this leap of destiny, seemed as unfair as Piper's affliction. None of them deserved the weight on their shoulders, and the fact that both bore it so selflessly and without complaint almost made things worse by highlighting even further just how undeserving of this unprecedented responsibility they were.
Neither of you have to do this, she said. But I know you're going to, and I hope one day you'll know how much it means to me because I can't even begin to tell you.
We're both ready,
Tara said.
Clark, are you okay with this?
He took a deep breath. He wasn't, not that it mattered, but with seemingly only a few minutes until their voyage through an untested gate to an unknown world, he wanted them to know something. The logic of not bothering people with news when they were dealing with something else wasn't alien to him, but in this case, something deep inside him just wouldn't let him keep quiet.
Phil Norris is dead,
he announced, seeking permission from no one before doing so and drawing a genuinely angry stare from Emma for being so tactless.
He was killed by a home intruder last night.
Dan and Tara, understandably, stood in stunned and silent sorrow.
We have a name and Leisha is going to get the guy as soon as this is done, Clark went on. Right, Leisha?
The alien nodded slowly.
He was terminally ill,
Emma sought to add as quickly as she could, hoping this would dull the blow of Clark's blunt revelation. She glared at Clark again, only momentarily, but long enough for him to know they would have this out later.
No one except Chip, who, as his lawyer, obviously couldn't tell anyone. He only had a few months left. The intruder was looking for information and stole Phil's laptop, but we can be 100% sure that's unbreakably encrypted, and I can't think what he could possibly have on there that could hurt us in the wrong hands anyway. But the point is, he didn't have long. In a sick way, and I feel dirty even saying this, when Leisha interrogates the guy we've identified and we find out who had it in for Phil enough to order something like this, Phil himself would probably tell you this wasn't all that bad compared to the alternative of him fading into a shell of himself over the next few months before dying slowly. He was the kind of guy who would have hated any of us having to see him like that, and he would have hated having to tell us.
He was that kind of guy,
Tara said, not fighting tears so much as wiping them from her cheeks before they arced in towards her lips.
That is exactly how he would want us to look at it.
Clark walked over and put his arms around her.
And I hope you know how much he came to like you, he told her. He was so happy when we got together. He didn't get why you'd be with me, but he liked it. He never shut up about the mismatch whenever your name came up. You know how he was. And Dan, he left us everything. Mostly to me because he didn't think you'd want it, but there's a little device we need you to put your thumbprint on and then answer a question. It'll give us the key to his stash, since we're waiting anyway. Dan could hardly believe what he'd just heard, but did take some degree of comfort from Emma's words. He expected the reality to sink in later, when there was less adrenaline pumping through his veins and his mind was less exhausted from the most stressful, sleepless night he had ever had. Behind him, Henry lifted a certain electronic device from the table,
Everyone gathered round, including the few who hadn't been there for its unboxing and so knew almost nothing about it. Since Phil's instructions made clear that Henry was first up, he placed his thumb on the screen.
Niagara, he said, reading the one-word prompt.
The word then faded, replaced by a keypad on the screen. He entered the date when he and Phil had drunk themselves stupid by the falls after their friend's bride and her entire family no-showed a planned wedding. A large green tick filled the screen before a visual indicator of a thumbprint appeared again.
Clark, Henry said, handing the device over. Nacho,
Clark read aloud. He shook his head at the ground.
What the fuck, man?
He cursed, staring at the floor for several seconds before looking up at Emma and Piper and apologizing for the language once he realized what he'd said. He entered a date and handed the device to Dan without even waiting for the tick. Tara squeezed his hand.
What did that mean?
She asked.
I toured with Nacho in Iraq before I got ill, and that was the day he died. I never told Phil the story, let alone a date or name. And his name wasn't even Ignacio. Nacho was just a nickname he'd had since school for eating so many damn nachos. I don't know how Phil would know that, and I don't know why he'd choose it.
Phil knows all kinds of shit, Henry said. Stuff, sorry. All kinds of stuff. And think about it. Who else could have answered that prompt with the right date? That's the point. He wanted all three of us to be in on it. So, for this thing to serve that purpose, they have to be things we wouldn't be able to guess for each other, if we somehow got past the thumbprint part.
With two or three answers correct, everyone turned to Dan. Access to Phil's stash was hardly the most important thing right now, but there was nothing else productive for the group to do during their enforced wait, and everyone needed a win.
What's the prompt? Clark called, trying to read Dan's face.
Dan put the device down on the side of the couch.
I'm not playing, he said, leaving it there and walking away.
Clark dashed to grab it. Come on, man, if you don't do it, there's a 24-hour lockout.
Okay, so it says Hopper. Just think, who's Hopper? Or what's Hopper, a guy? A rabbit?
It's hardly going to be a damn rabbit,
Henry lamented, wheeling his way towards Dan.
Come on, son, think. For Phil.
11:08:13, Dan grunted. As soon as Clark entered the date, a green tick filled the screen. Like an ATM, the device then presented a card. There was no cash, but the reward was priceless.
So, who the hell is Hopper?
Henry asked, while Clark beamed like a child with the greatest Christmas gift ever as he held the card aloft in celebration. Dan shook his head. In reaction to this, Henry and Clark shared a glance.
One more mystery to unravel. How much longer are we expecting them to take preparing whatever Melly needs anyway?
Dan asked Leisha, suddenly impatient.
They've been ready for around 2 minutes, the alien replied. I didn't want to interrupt.
Emma handed Piper to Henry while she ran to her bedroom to gather a bag of supplies in case the baby needed anything, while Dan and Tara began their goodbye for nows.
We won't be back when Emma and Piper get back, Dan said to his father, who for one reason or another looked less concerned than he had on previous occasions. But it won't be much longer.
I don't envy you, son, Henry replied. But not a day goes by that I'm not proud. On this one, I don't even know how to tell you. Go and save those damn gates. Tara, you too, darling.
As Emma hurried back, lifted Piper from Henry's arms and positioned herself beside Leisha near the entrance to the kitchen, Dan and Tara saw that it was time to go. Clark held on to Tara for as long as he could.
What's with all this leaving me all the time stuff?
He asked, trying to calm his own nerves and hers with a little bit of humor.
I keep coming back, don't I?
She replied, kissing him one last time before joining Emma. Dan was there by now, too.
Say good work and major thanks to Timo and Alessandro, he called to the group, but mainly Clark. You know, for finding that transcript.
Clark forcefully shook his head.
You'll be back soon enough to tell them yourself. Godspeed, Dan McCarthy, William Godfrey chimed in, having received no personal farewells. Godspeed, Tara Ford.
You'll be home soon, too,
Emma told the ICA chairman, whose past 24 hours had been as crazy as anyone else's. She saw him now in an altogether different light since his very honest and surprising comment from a few minutes earlier, when Dan almost revealed what Godfrey worried might have been too much sensitive information about Piper.
And as soon as I get back, we can start worrying about what the hell we're going to tell the world has been going on.
Godfrey roared in laughter. God, don't remind me. Oh well, between us, I'm sure we'll think of something. They don't call us the Dream Team for nothing, Emma.
I don't think anyone calls you that at all, Clark chuckled. But yeah, that part will work itself out.
Okay, Leisha said. To the craft.
Lise, go?
Piper asked from Emma's arms, bringing smiles all round. That's right, darling, Dan said, one arm around Emma's shoulder and the other hand touching the baby's hair. And this time, Piper's coming too.